Hello, everyone. We are back with the much-awaited part two of our interview with Chef Carlo Lamagna, all the way in the U.S. of A. Chef Ed, where were we nga pala?
We were comparing how Chef Carlo and I and Chef Sharwin, no, when you run a kitchen brigade or kitchen team, it's very much, you can compare it to running your own basketball team, where you're not the star player anymore. Apparently, you're now the head coach. You have to be. No, but from time to time, you kind of have to flex. So, Chef Carlo, take it away.
Yeah.
I haven't had the pleasure, no, of going to your restaurant yet, but definitely it's in my bucket list. Let's just say na lang na ano. You find out na someone from Michelin is visiting. Oh, ano ang ilalabas mo na signature dishes niya?
Man.
Pakitang kilas.
Well, it's funny that is that you know, one day maybe they'll show up. I think ang ipapakita ko talaga is you know, like the same thing that I did last year, I would do. Like I would present the things that I would like to eat. And of course, Michelin, ano sila, fancy na yan, so tasting menu. Right. So I actually we're actually planning on creating a tasting menu, kind of a tasting experience at the restaurant. So I would open up with an oyster. Because, you know, the memories of going to the beaches, pupunta kami dun, makahanap ko yung mga oysters. Yeah, this is before knowing what the hell red tide was. It was always a gamble.
May red tide ba sa States? May red tide ba dyan, chef?
A lot of red tide dito.
Kala ko dito.
When the waters warm up. But because I used to go to the beaches, you know, with my friends, that was mag-start kami ng fire, lalagay lang yung mga oysters dun sa, no, dun sa fire hanggang bumukas sila kasi wala kami pambukas noon eh. So you wait till they pop open, tapos maglagay kami ng ano, lime at saka hinebra.
That works.
So I would open, the courses, you know, as quickly as I would go, or it would be, I would open with an oyster. You know, I would make a little bit of a yun nga, yung gin and calamansi na granita, right on top. Then I would serve, I would go right into things like kilawin or kinilaw. I would definitely do isaw. I would show them intestines in its truest form. I would feed them, I think one of my favorite dishes that we cooked in the past couple of years was dinuguan na pato o itik, like a duck dinuguan. Wow. Not a lot of people know about.
I would love to try that, chef. Duck dinuguan.
Not a lot of people know that the duck dinuguan is an actual dish. I encountered that. Yan sa Pangasinan noon eh. When nagkakatay kami ng sarili namin na ano, na manok, baboy, duck, everything, you know, sabi niya, oh, sige, magdinuguan na tayo. I was like, out of what? Wala, hindi naman tayo nagkatay ng baboy. So I was like, oh, duck, okay. Serve it. We served it with putong kalasyaw. Putong kalasyaw, dinuguan na itik or dinuguan na pato. That would definitely make it on there. I would definitely serve them goat. Kasi goat to me is like the most amazing meat. I love goat.
Which is, I know, that's very underrated here. Like, we lost the taste for kambing here.
Aww.
Like,
makes me
sad. Parang it's very hard to find in restaurants.
Well, I'm a turo-turo guy. I still end up eating goat pag yung mga kaldereta, when you eat at the calendar, yes.
But
if you say restaurant per se,
that's the thing. I think because those things are getting lost, it's up to chefs like us to be able to bring that back in. So Richie, like to answer your question, I would serve them all of the everything. So bibigyan ko yan ng balot. You know what? I've been actually you would love this. I would sell Michelin balot. I would. The reason why is because it's all about everything is all about marketing, diba? I've been buying balot para sa restaurant because I love eating it. It's our snack. Kasi, you know, when you're busy in a service, you need something high in protein. High in fat. So in the middle of service, si Lester, yung isang kusinero, yung kapampangan, bibili yan ng balot eh. But that's, you know, lulutuin niya doon. And then I say, chef, we got a second. Tara, kain tayo. Sige. Kain kami ng balot, balik, you know, right back to work. And all of a sudden, our bartender, who actually is, he's a Vietnamese immigrant, Aaron, he was adopted by an American family, but he's Vietnamese. But he's like, oh, you guys have balut? He's like, yeah, man. He's like, oh, I'm going to sell it. I was like, ah, oh, okay. You know, I just like everybody else is like, okay, well, you know, and to me in my head, I was like, fuck it, go for it. Let's see what you can do. He was trying to sell it. You know, people are eating it. And then they're like, oh, what is it? And they go, chef, you want to explain? I was like, of course, you leave it up to me to explain. So in the fanciest way possible, I describe balut to non-Filipino eaters. The people who don't know what balut is, I always say, oh, you know, I see that Aaron mentioned balut. You know, I would, they're like, what is it? I would be like, oh, you know, balut's kind of like a mini duck tasting menu. They're like, oh, what? What the hell? I was like, yeah, it's a mini duck tasting menu. Because when you open it, kailangan eh. You have to be that way. And to me, what makes me happier is that I'm breaking the stigma. Yung taboo ng ano eh, nakakain mong balot. Yung taboo na yan. Kasi right. I mean, they always see it on Fear Factor. They always see it like as ay, kadiri right. or whatever. I'm like, you know what? Fuck you, dude. No, dirty. It's delicious. Yeah. It's great. So, of course, you know, I put on my best, what I like to call my best white person voice. and I'd be like, well... But I tell them, balot is like a tasting menu. Kasi pagbukas mo, consomme na yan eh. That's the purest form of consomme. You know, there's no yeah. other added ingredient. Ano lang yan? Yung sabaw niya is a pure consomme. Then you're going to get into this beautifully rich kind of yolk flavor with a really good mix between creamy and firm texture. Diba? Yung dilaw, the yellow.
In dilaw.
Dilaw, yeah.
That was the sabinko. Then you're going to get into the most interesting part of the duck, which has many different textures, but has a really, really rich flavor. Ayun, benta na. That's the sabinko. Yung bubuksan nila, titignan nila. So I was like, good, eat it. What did you think? Oh, this was amazing. Ano, meron mga video na pinusumang koko eh. I'm cracking balut tableside for people. Go ahead, drink. Sip sipin mo. Parang, you know, it's like a kid. It's like an adult teaching a kid. Okay, drink it. Sip sipin mo na yan, ha? O sige, oh yan, kainin mo yan. Ay, huwag mong tignan. Okay lang yan. Kainin mo lang. You know? But that's, to me, that's what's important. Is one, maintaining the culture. Two, being proud of our culture. Three, not feeding into the taboo of our food, dinuguan, how in the US, you know, people always called it chocolate meat. Why do we have to call it chocolate meat now? There's blood in all other other cuisines. French cuisine used it to thicken sauces. Bloodwurst in Germany, morcilla in Spain, all these different things. Tapos pagdating sa atin, ay nahiya tayo, sige, chocolate meat na lang ang tawagin natin. Let's not feed that to guests.
This is amazing because this is such an antithesis to one of our first ever episodes for the Sinigang podcast in one of our first seasons where we talked about how we should actually stop scaring tourists by serving them balut as the first ever dish when they get to the Philippines. And this is such a nice 180 degree, right, philosophy that I actually can accept and actually enjoy listening to. And it can actually do.
Yeah.
You sell it.
Well, it's all about marketing. Marketing lang yan eh. Kasi isipin mo, in the past 10 years, the rise of Filipino food. Filipino food has been around. We're the first immigrants to set foot in North America, right? We're the first Asian yeah. group.
I didn't know that.
We're the first Asians in the U.S.
New Orleans, yeah. diba? If I'm not mistaken, New Orleans.
Where'd we come from?
Landing from
the,
point.
Because you got to think about way back when, Spanish galleon trade. So... Well, the closest outpost of Spain, sa Pilipinas, was Mexico, Acapulco. They called it the Acapulco galleon trade. Mm. So when they would go to the Philippines and come back to the U.S., they would bring back Asian slaves, and then they would escape.
Of course, we're Filipinos. We'll escape.
I'm out.
Come on.
You know?
Adios, madabas.
But, you know, something about... Something very interesting about how you describe the balut experience. Kasi parang here, like when we have fine dining restaurants, or for example, you know, when you cook for, let's say, foreign heads of state, they'll cook Filipino food and then they'll put it on the menu. And of course, since it's foreign guests or foreign heads of state, we have to describe the dish in English or in French or whatever. And the normal joke ng mga Pinoy is, eh, ano lang yun, balut lang yun. Pinaganda mo pa yung, ano. But that's the point. I think that's what we lack. No? We lack the marketing.
And that, to me, has been the biggest hindrance of the rise of Filipino food dito sa US and internationally. This actually leads into that point of discussion is that, yun nga, pwede natin isosyal yun mga ano eh. We can make that into a very sophisticated dish. But at the end of the day, just like the crab mentality, right? It's our own people that drag us back down. Kasi sasabihin nila, ay, blah, 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 or that's just whatever, or I can make it better, or I'm...
Like, they won't pay for a $20.
No. And you know what I say to them? Yeah. I say, get the fuck out. I don't care. That's what I tell them. I was like, look, I know you can make this at home. That's fine. But I'm not here for home cooking. I'm here to help bring our stuff to people. You know, there. You don't know how many couples have walked in na Filipino or Filipina ang asawa nila puti. Tapos yung mga puti ang nag-aano eh. The white people are the ones who are like, oh, my wife can make this better. Oh, why is this there? They're saying, get the fuck out of here. I don't care about your bullshit. I'm cooking my food and I've been doing this for 22 years. If you think your wife is the only cook, then why the fuck aren't you home eating her food? Why are you here? You know, and why is she enslaved to you, indentured to you to cook your fucking food? Sorry. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I think, Yunya, coming back to community, is that we all have to support each other no matter what. Like, I shouldn't say no matter what. We should all hold each other accountable for the food that we put out and the words that we say to help grow Filipino food. If I'm cooking Filipino food and I reimagine a dish, like yung duck dinuguan, di ba? I confit the duck in adobo spices, like, you know, bay leaf, garlic, a little bit of sugar, a little bit of salt, di ba? And then I fry it. Then I make my dinuguan like a sauce, like a real, not just like, you know, bahala na, but I make it a really nice, elegant sauce. But I never lose sight of the true soul of the dish, right? I'm not putting in cream. I'm not putting in all these fancy ingredients into the sauce to mask anything. Talagang dinuguan siya. But I just use my super chef powers that we all have in making something and creating it, making it beautiful. Kasi yung nga, like dinuguan, di ba? What do we usually put in dinuguan? You know, sometimes you see peppers, di ba? And onions. So I pickle peppers and onions to add balance to the dish kasi acidity, di ba? Because the blood is rich, the duck is rich, so I add acid. Imbis na konting suka sa dinuguan sauce, I always put a little bit of, you know, pickled peppers, so it's outside of that. And then to round...
But it's the same ingredients.
It's the same concept. Yeah, and I still serve it with puto. Putong kalasyao. Pinaferment namin yung sarili namin puto. Mm. And then we make it. And then we serve it like that. Yeah, and it was probably one of the most popular dishes that I've ever put on my menu across the board, Filipino and Americans alike. We have to love ourselves first before we can love others, right? Chefs Ed and Sharwin, when you guys first started cooking, did you guys cook Filipino food right away? Or did you study French?
I did.
Or did you study...
Yeah, I was trained by the French, so...
Yeah, they only teach in culinary school the French technique, unfortunately. And if you ask the culinary instructors, are you going to teach us how to make Filipino food here? They'll be like, no, we have to teach you the French technique.
So give credit to where credit is due, Diba. The good thing that the French did was they organized. That's it. They organized everything. Brigade system natin, di ba? It's traditional brigade system, grilling, blah, blah, blah. But they formalized everything. That's it. They just formalized everything. So what if you take that training and adapt it? Because saute is this, you know, we all do the same technique. We just have different names. Gisa natin. Gisa mo. Same thing. Same, di ba?
Sinangkot siya.
Diba? Parang ano, parang yung mirapwa, di ba? Pag nagsaute ka ng mirapwa, sangkot siya lang yan, di ba? So, but I think that's the underrated problem that we don't talk about is that we have this cultural thing. Now we're afraid na we'll come across as mayabang or we'll come across as parang hindi natin ma-differentiate yung confidence sa kayong yabang. So when we start to use highfalutin words, for example, to describe our dish, parang the natural tendency of Pinoys is to say, ang arte naman ng pagkasabi mo, eh inihaw lang yan. But we need to do that. We need to do that para others will perceive us.
Yeah, that, honestly, that's part ignorance too. Is because you can't limit yourselves. We can't limit ourselves to. I'm not saying that that the verb, the wordage that we use needs to be all flowery, but it has to be translated to another language. I mean, I'm not even. Well, I'm like, I've done this in Germany. When I was in Germany, I didn't speak German, and they didn't speak English. So, or they didn't speak, you know, Tagalog. So what do I have to do? We have to meet common ground. It's English. And I'm going to articulate. Being educated and being confident in what we do is often taken as hubris. You're like, magiging mayabang ka. I know a lot of people might listen to this podcast and be like, who the fuck is Chef Carlo? And why is he talking like that? You know, but they don't know my history. They don't know my background, diba? Because hey, you know, I lived in the Philippines for 10 years. I went to high school and college there, and I was never rich. Like I'm, you know, they don't know my background, but they'll think I'm mayabang yan kasi maroon mag English yan. I was like, fuck. And then
my accent. Americaners.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. And it's funny because yung iba dito kala nila hindi ako maroon mag Tagalog. So I'm like, okay. I'll let them talk their talk. And they're sitting at my counter. Like, I'm right there. They're sitting at the counter and they're talking a lot of shit. I was like, and then I start talking to Tagalog. All of a sudden, nahuli sila.
They're like, di marun mag-adobo to.
Anong klase?
Di marun na mag-ano ng suka to sa adobo. Hinalo niya ka.
Ang arte naman yung pagka-plating yan. I was like, yeah, because you're in a... Then I would say exactly that. I was like, yeah, because you're in a restaurant. And then I turn around and I just keep cooking. They just stop. They're shocked, you know? And that's the point, is that if we can change the mind... Because I always tell people, there's two goals at my restaurant. It's one, it's to bring Filipino food to the masses. It's to share our culture and my love of Filipino food to everybody else. Two, it's to connect with other Filipinos. I'll cook you pancit and you'll be like, and I want my reaction that I want you to have is that ang sarap ng pancit nito. Iba. It's almost like, or it almost tastes like, and the biggest compliment, of course, is, oh, it's better than, right? So yung connection points out in it, diba? If I feed the three of you a Filipino tasting menu, I want to at least connect with you on some level. So each dish, diba? In dinuguan, for example, it's like, ay, ang sarap ng dinuguan mo. Okay, that, I could taste that. Pero cool yung ginawa mo na ganyang ganyan, right? That's the small things that I want, that are my goals at the restaurant. And to answer your, I know we veered off your question a little bit, Richie, but going back into the Michelin guide, imagine having that honor of cooking our food to the Michelin guide. But then, you cook Filipino food, but you made it too European-centric. You know, does that make sense?
Right.
Then what's the point of cooking Filipino food if you're out to change the entire dish? I know people who say that sabi natin, I don't know, fucking kaldereta. Sabi natin, kaldereta. They take kaldereta and they transform it into this dish that's come something so far from what kaldereta is or even tastes like that they lost sight of what it's supposed to be.
They're like, oh, it has potatoes.
Yeah,
that's kaldereta.
Yeah, it's olives.
You know, like yeah, you win it.
But then what's the point of cooking your culture and cooking your food? It's almost like you're lying to yourself, you know?
Connected to Richie's question, Chef, what would you serve for dessert? I wouldn't know.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah.
You know, diba? Dirty ice cream? Would you find dirty ice cream there? Man.
Yeah.
Deva, well, deva. You find a frigging Carabao in Oregon.
Shit. I wish. Yeah. It's one of the things I miss the most, actually, is in, ano, in tapa, na Carabao. Oh, my God.
Then you'll be milking it for the ice cream.
Dual purpose. No, I think for dessert, I think I would do. I've been doing yung kakanin natin yung feeling. I call it feeling biko.
Feeling
originally
biko.
we were doing tupig because you know I'm Ilocano, so a lot of people don't understand the small differences of yung iba't ibang kakanin natin, di ba? So before I was doing biko, but now you know we streamline a little bit more. But our most popular dessert that has gotten the most feedback. Is and that has never left the menu because people would be up in arms is yung biko namin. So we do biko with not necessarily traditional latik. Diba yung latik natin is yung parang yung durog na ano na cooked coconut and it has this firmer texture, diba?
Yeah.
We don't cook our latik down that far. We make it more of a condensed coconut milk. But it has the same flavors yung cooked coconut and then we top it with polvoron. Yun lang. Yeah, instead of the cookie form of polvoron, we just,
that's interesting.
Yeah,
that's
so smart. I do.
smart, my friend.
I do a brown butter polvoron. So instead of just having usually using the typical binder, I make brown butter. Same sort of brown butter. I mean, let's be honest. I'll eat that with everything. But yeah, brown butter polvoron. I don't veer off very far from that recipe because it's my mom's recipe. Yung polvoron namin, and then yung biko. Same thing. You just press it, cut it. Then we broil it a little bit. And then yun nga, we put the latik. We put a little bit of salt dun sa ano, condensed coconut milk namin and sauce it up. People fucking love it. That's what I would serve at a Michelin. That's what I served. Yeah.
I was half expecting like a donut there because Portland known for the donuts. Man,
there's only a couple donut shops that are worth their grain of salt here. Kasi yun nga, I guarantee you. You know, the donuts you might have heard from here are Voodoo Donuts, diba? Voodoo Donuts.
Definitely
the one,
Voodoo.
The one with the star?
Blue Star.
The one with the star.
Yeah.
Blue Star. That's the one I had too, when I was there.
Blue Star's okay.
Yeah.
But I like Pips Donuts. Oh my God. It's so good.
I didn't get there because I was only there for like three days.
Well, we gotta turn that around. Yeah.
But I always tell people whenever I go back to the States, whenever I get the opportunity, I would make Portland a stop.
Oh, that's awesome.
Honestly. Oregon. Portland, downtown Portland, Oregon, everything. I mean, amazing place. Keep Portland
always,
weird, right?
Always.
And all that. It's amazing.
I think the dessert portion is an important part. It's often overlooked. And that's the dessert that I served to Kushbu, the food and wine editor, and she loved it. I put a scoop of ube ice cream on there. I made my own ube ice cream. We make everything in-house, you know, as much as we can. Ice cream, everything. And she loved it. She was like, oh, this is fucking amazing. I was like, yeah.
It's funny how Richie, the vlogger, would ask, what would you serve a Michelin star judge, right? I'm sure Sharwin and I would be, what would you serve Padma and Tom Colicchio, you know, top chef? What would you serve them? That would be us.
Right? Oftentimes, because it's actually scarier to cook for your fellow chefs.
That's true.
Because they know the behind the scenes. They know when you're cooking real soulful food or you're just trying to cover it up with lots of magic or whatever, diba? My illusions or mahuli ka eh, diba? Like but I can attest to Chef Carlos pancit. I had it in Portland. It's good. It's really good. So
that's coming from a Chinoy.
And then, I just want to ask Chef Carlo, because you're one of the few Pinoys to ever cook in the James Beard house. What does that feel like?
That was pretty amazing. I mean, in any country, there's always this like benchmark, right? Some, you know, the European countries originally had Michelin, whether it's in AAA diamonds, all that stuff. For the US, one of the biggest benchmarks is the James Beard Awards, right? And to be able to cook in a very historical and renowned place representing Filipino food, that was probably one of the greatest honors I've had of my career. We all have bucket lists in our entire lives, and that was one of them, was to cook in the Beard House. And it was a crazy feeling to be able to bring together other amazing Filipino chefs and represent our culture, our heritage, our food. That was important. That was a big step in all of our careers, for sure. And it's this feeling like, the same feeling that if you were to cook for Padma, right? Or if you were to cook for Tom Colicchio, if you had that opportunity to cook for the Michelin guide, right? You don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, I did do it for personal pleasure, you know, because I had an opportunity. You know, I served Dinadaraan, you know, parang feeding Dinadaraan, I like to call it, didn't serve James Beard House. When they asked me what I was going to cook, that was the first thing I thought, because you know why? It was the most, it's the most powerful dish because of its nature, in taboo nature. Oh, you're going to serve blood. But then you're serving it in the house that James Beard built. And he was all about French, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, we use blood too. Sige, look at it.
Super Ilocano yun, chef. Dinadaraan. That's what you served them, huh?
But I took different techniques to reach to make that dish beautiful. I'll send you guys pictures sometime. So I did make, yung kasing dinadaraan sa atin, diba? It's a drier dinuguan. Parang, ano, it's like cooked through.
Yeah.
So I did both. So I made a sauce, but I also made a blood crumble out of a blood sausage na ginawa ko eh. So I made a really dry crumble as a texture, then the dinuguan sauce on there, then the pork shoulder that I cooked, I braised slowly, and then I seared it so it has a nice crunch. Then I paired it with kasi yung dinadaraan sa amin dun sa nasa bahay in Pangasinan, we used to add all the offals, right? You know, pig ear, everything. So I made a pig ear chicharron. I layered pig ears, pressed them, cooked them, pressed them, layered them, and I sliced them super thin. And then I dry them. Then when I fry it, it looks like a parang layered chicharron yan eh, with texture, right?
Yeah.
So I put that on top, and I served that with instead of puto, I served it with sticky rice, but a savory sticky rice in bone marrow sticky rice, bone marrow suman. So,
Yeah, that's one thing. Good segue, chef. That's one thing I wish Filipinos would have more balls to serve.
Yeah.
Savory suman. I've only had that like coconut rice in one of my friends' restaurants in New York and Pig and Cow. They said, hey, order our coconut rice. I said, why? It's not Filipino. They're like, no, it is. It tastes like suman. I said, okay. I ate it with their house sisig and all that. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, how come we don't have that this year in the Philippines?
That segues into a little bit of the problems that some people don't see is yung savory side of things. Mm-hmm. Filipinos have a hard time breaking away from what they're used to. I think people in general, I shouldn't just say Filipinos, but people in general have a hard time breaking away with the familiar and being adventurous, diba? Like taking suman and turning that into a savory dish, or turning a lugaw into a sweet dish, or, you know, taking humba and applying that to, say, you know, whatever other cut of meat there is. But when you say lechon, most people in the U.S. think pig. But I'm like, well, have you ever been to Andox? Have you ever had baliwag? Oh my God, it's my favorite. It's the first thing I get when I go home.
Yeah.
But they're so hard pressed. Now, I hindi lechon yan. I was like, how do you know? Lechon baka is a thing. Lechon manok is a thing. You know, it's a technique. Lechon's a technique. So it's one of those things where you're right. Filipinos and people in general have a hard time veering away from the traditional. And when you do, but like we were saying earlier, that's the thing that has to change. They have to become more open-minded, right? And that's how we push things. Mm-hmm. But going back to what I said earlier, it still has to connect. Kung kinai mo yung savory suman ko, I want you to, I have a lot of intent of what I want you to taste. So yung savory suman ko, it's like a bulalo in a banana leaf, right?
It's amazing, chef. I can already imagine it.
Sticky rice, bone marrow. I put calamansi gel on it, but acidity cuts through the fat. That's the point. Yeah. So anyway,
that's a James Beard House dish right there. Honestly, there were some American consultants who came to the Philippines and asked me about it. I just smiled and said, yeah, sure. If you guys really want to bring me there to cook there, and apparently it takes a whole screening process to get to cook there, and through emails and all, I guess, it never pushed through. But you being able to represent the Philippines and cook there for all of us Filipino chefs and non-chefs even there in the James Beard House, amazing opportunity. Congratulations and kudos Chef Carlo.
Yeah,
that was amazing.
It was a good time.
I have a feeling this is one of those episodes that could have gone on for like 3 more hours, and you know, we wouldn't miss a beat, guys. Because Chef Carlo is he's now an honorary Sinigang member.
I want
guys.
A shirt.
Come on.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's so cool getting to talk to someone who just gets it. I don't want to. I'm not even gonna think of a different term for it. He just gets it. So I'm so happy.
It's definitely been an honor to be able to talk with you guys. Because say yung nga, it's very rare do we find people of like mind. Minsan nga yung iba, they're like, oh, I'm dead set on authentic, traditional, blah, 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 chuchu. Okay lang yan, sige. Go ahead, talk about your authenticism and your traditional. Oh, I'm sorry, are you using a metal pan? Kasi authentic talaga? Gusto mo kasi kumuha ka ng palayok. You know? So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always say that too. Diba? Kung totoo, palayok, tsaka open flame. Yan yung true traditional cooking natin.
Yung sisig dapat ano, sizzling plate with margarine. Chef Carlo, amazing talk. Do you wanna for our Filipino friends who might be listening, or even our friends in the US who might be listening to our podcast, because we have international listeners, guys, all the way in, I don't know what was the last international funny country we found listening to us.
Iceland.
Iceland for sure.
Please go ahead and plug Chef Carlo, all of your projects, your restaurants. Yeah.
If you guys are ever find yourself traveling to Portland, Oregon, come find me. I own Magna Cucina in my little corner of the world, always representing Filipino food first, as much as I can, Ilocano, because, you know, that's my heritage. That's where I come from. But please, everybody, just, you know, we have an opportunity to be able to share our culture and represent us as a people. And I think it's very important that we do it together instead of trying to one-up each other. A good friend of mine uses the phrase community over competition. And I believe that's very important. You know, we as a community have to come together to push the boundaries of what Filipino food can be. Because we already know what it is, but we don't know what the future holds for us. And together we can do that. And it's chefs like, you know, Chef Ed, Chef Sharwin, myself, and other amazing chefs here in the United States and beyond, you know, in the Philippines, in Europe, everywhere. We're all pushing for the same thing. So let's not fight each other over it. Let's help each other grow. And that's how communities thrive. Right. So strength in numbers.
Strength in numbers.
Are you active on social media, Chef Carlo? Instagram,
On Instagram at MagnaPDX. Personal Instagram is Twisted Filipino. And a little side project is my little Arnis Club. I do Filipino martial arts. I've been doing it for a long time. Rose City Eskrima. Nice. Give us a follow and, you know, show your love and support.
Oh, I didn't know that Eskrima was Arnis.
And Caliera, all the same. It's different.
I don't know, because my favorite comic book character of all time, Nightwing, former Robin,
Eskrima.
He uses Eskrima sticks.
Yeah, same lang yan.
Yeah,
it just depends on where you're from.
Learn something new today, guys. All right. Okay, guys. So this is Chef Ed. And then we have Chef Sharwin and the pickiest eater in the world, Richie Zamora, saying goodbye to everyone. This has been another wonderful, lovely episode of the Cine Gang.